Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on? who shot who, why that gang is upset with this gang, where is the money coming in for these gangs, who's giving the gun. And if we have people in the crime prevention, or we even have these groups, I mean, I'm saying it too, this anti-violence, all these other groups who run around, they get this grant money, but you are running around with your head cut off like a chicken. And you're saying, I asked you, do you know who just got killed? No, you don't know his name. And I'm not saying you have to know all of the garbage going on within the hood, and you have to sit on the corner and talk to everybody on Broadway and Lindale. But I'm saying is, it's enough information via Facebook, poking around, doing a little, where you can find out actually who the killers are. You can see who's doing the shooting, who's who got killed, and who which gang they're in. And exactly. What gang does not like them? So this is simple criminal justice 101.
Yeah.
And these people, like you said, are collecting checks. And sometimes it's black folks. I really hate to say it. Mm-hmm. John, they get jobs, and we get these jobs because we're black.
Yeah.
We get them because we get black people into the department, so they get in. They get in. Do you know what's going on? And stop, Mason, please just stop. Let me do my job. And now as the shooting downtown is horrible, uptown is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
St. Paul is another dead, one dead, another day ago. When does this stop?
Exactly. And to your point on the investigative piece, there was two 17-year-olds and a 20-year-old the other day that were carjacking people here in St. Paul. I found out the guy's name. I went to his Facebook page. A little research. On June 20th, he posted, "I am feeling some kind of way. This is not me. I'm turning into another person." Okay?
Wow.
At that point in his life, there were things going on. But number one, he's not in school. We're not in like the regular school system. There are no catch-alls for these youth. He's unemployed. He has a girlfriend that looks like loves him dearly because she's on her page. She says, "I've been crying like crazy," because he's in jail now, okay?
Yep.
And there's no one to fill that gap for our young people killing each other. It's a lack of vocabulary. It's getting a hold of these weapons, which I don't know to this day. Well, I have an idea. I mean, I have a thesis about it, that they're coming in from the suburbs, they're stolen weapons, et cetera, and it's a hot market out there because –
yeah.
If your friend has a gun and you have $200 and your friend needs $200, you're going to buy a gun or weapon of some sort.
Oh, yeah. And that's it, John. They have and that's it. We've talked about this on the show numerous times. I talk about it on my show where we have to have the right individuals within the system, yourself, me, others.
Yes.
Others, because really, do we, you know, you got your stuff going on. I'm a business owner. I got tons of stuff going on my, but other people who are actually going to help create a system for kids who are lost in that manner, as far as saying, you know what, I know school is out. I know you're unemployed. There's so that we have a lawn, we have a cleanup crew or a lawn crew, or we have people going over north building stuff and putting these kids to work so they can get the money to stay
out
of the street.
Exactly. And I believe, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I believe that there's an opportunity here. And there's no word for crisis in China or Japan.
Right.
It's opportunity. So if you erase the word crisis and just use opportunity, we do have opportunities here in Minneapolis and St. Paul to employ our youth. I pass by at least 100 lawns every other day when I'm not under quarantine and I go to the grocery store or something. And their lawns need to be cut. These are elderly, disabled people. We have enough kids that we can have Minneapolis and St. Paul, at least the grass, looking great, you know. And,
and
there's not people that are willing. These people that are working in the St. Paul and Minneapolis crime prevention units, they are not. They don't have the acumen or the ability to figure this out. We've seen it already. The people that the cities have been giving money to for youth engagement have failed. You know,
absolutely.
If you want to give, if someone wants to give, if you and I, Jonathan, got together and says, "Hey, we're going to start this organization. We want youth 12 to 18 years old. We want to meet with them twice a week." And we want to talk to them about what they want to talk about, find out what they need, give out some gift cards to Target or Cub Foods or anything for their family, because you don't know what really they need and how we could help them. But we have to find out. You know, we would be ignored because there's a couple more brothers talking about, let's get some youth to play basketball at the park or play football. Or, I mean, that's
right.
Cool.
And I'm tired of it. I'm tired of that. I'm tired of it. Yeah. Dad. And I'm actually having these conversations, you know, and we're going to get those programs in place.
Mm-hmm.
I have some really big projects, you know, Operation Blackwater I'm working on right now, as far as I got a couple big projects, you know, the Upper Harbor Terminals coming at,
mm-hmm.
in Minneapolis, and we have to be on top of that. Larry McKenzie posted a post the other day ago, and, you know, basically, you know, I got on there, really, I can just tell you quite honest, I got on there and I said, you know what, it's time for all of us, all of these black men, all of the black men, to say, you know what, it's time for us to put our minds together, all of this, you know, I'm doing it my way, this way, we need to actually put the Urban League to work.
Yeah, real quick.
Real quick, and then, and really all these, you know, old talking heads, we love you guys, we're willing to have you guys talk and sit down. Obviously, clearly, it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, in conjunction with them, where do we go now next? When we do set up these programs or figure out these fail safes for the poor youth and those who are in poverty. Right now, John,
mm-hmm.
you know that it's going to be 51 to 60 million unemployed very
mm-hmm.
soon.
Yeah, very soon. And you know what bugs me about this is I need to say hello. There's a lot of people tuning in on Facebook Live. Greg, Catherine, a bunch of people. Our buddy Reg Chapman, WCCO, thank you for tuning in, supporting this. The Heather, Rashad, Anthony Turner, Ryan. If I missed anybody, I apologize. I just wanted to go through there. Our call-in number, by the way, just let me give this out, is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Or give us a call. We like your comments, suggestions, and criticism.
Please call.
Yeah, and, you know, Jonathan, I sit back because when Mr. Edwards and I did this show for over 10 years, we would talk about this stuff, this black-on-black crime, these processes, these people in these offices with these jobs. And
mm-hmm.
and I went back last night again after I text you. I went back to 2010 and 2011 and 2012 from the Ron and Don show. And they were an hour long back then. Actually, the show was called On Point back then. And so I'm looking, and there's a trend. There's a trend of murders. There's a trend of people saying they're going to do this, they're going to do that. And the next year, the same stuff happens again. We were literally repeating history we have been all those years. You see these initiatives, like Northside Achievement Zone is part of a group that's going to get a piece of $16 million. My question is, for what?
Right. And you're right. You're right, John. When you're talking about NAS, Northside Achievement Zone, with Don Samuels and Sandra Samuels, you know, I've been hypercritical of all these groups because, like you said, do you go back into the files? I talk to the stories. You send me the clips of, you know, when KMOJ was getting put together and how they were treating Al Flowers.
Yeah.
And now they were having them on the radio. And all of that, it's really malarkey to me. I think it's, I think that it's time, though, this is where I'm at, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's time for us to all really now wrinkle up the paper, throw it in the trash can, and say, now what does it look like going forward? Who's getting this money? Now we can now just start dispersing the money within the Twin Cities. And I want to be in those conversations. I literally, God,
yes.
I'm going to be in all of those conversations. When there's $100 million that come in, I want to make sure a majority goes to the right place, and it's not going to just go to four groups. It's going to be to black media where our show gets 250,000 so we can do production and we can be able to do our thing. It's going to go another 250,000 over here to this group because I know they're working and I'm boots on the ground and I know that they're anti-violence and they can protect these protect these women and children within the within the community who are absolutely petrified, Don. And I want to say it, they're petrified. The bullets are flying. There's crime. There's robberies going on. You know, there's body after body in the same areas. The police are getting there. There's a shooting. The police, they just cut the police. 1.2. Is that for political theater or they cut the department? The department they're missing 5,000 calls. We can't cut the department. We need oversight and accountability.
Yeah.
And they're not doing that. And that falls upon, really, honestly, the decision making of the Minneapolis City Council,
which needs
and
to go.
And we're gonna talk about.
Yeah.
It needs to go.
Yeah.
And they put people in place, and I'm very critical of these inputs. Sometimes it's Andrea Jenkins. It's maybe a Felipe Cunningham, Jeremiah Ellison. I'm picking out some people of color first. It's the Cameron Gordons who say they're alongside of Kano's who, she got her district, but she doesn't do that for us. It's so much stuff that goes on. And Jacob Rye, I know he's from Virginia Oakton, Virginia.
Yeah.
I guess he's trying. I know he's trying his best, but we have to have a more concerted effort to implement this change. And we don't have time, Doc.
You're absolutely right. And on that note, to dovetail this conversation, your conversation is that I read in the paper and I was shocked. The city council voted to get rid of the public information officer for the Minneapolis police. Okay.
Who, John Elder?
Yes. It's in the paper this morning and yesterday. And so I'm looking at that.
So they're talking about John Elder because really, and I might have to take a little blame for that, John, because when George Floyd died,
I was listening.
I said, who's going to tell this lie? Who's going to tell the lie? And, they have to have the public officer talk. John Elder, right, was the one who talked. And it really is not John. Somebody, it was from the top. This is where
it was the mayor. The mayor,
It comes from the top. They had to cover up this murder.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever covered up the murder, they said that he died in the ambulance. We know he died.
No, he died on the ground.
Hennepin County Medical Examiner, Andrew Baker said that he redid another. He died of complications in the ambulance, but he died of possibly COVID-19. And so now we're seeing that. And Scott Jensen, Scott Jensen,
yes.
Republican Scott Jensen from, and I think he's tuning in right now from the Senate. I believe he's in the Senate or House, one or two. I think he's in the Senate. He was talking about how they were telling him with COVID-19. Autopsy, because he's a doctor, they're telling him that he has to do this type of stuff. So we're seeing this play out on black and brown bodies.
Yeah.
And that's where it goes. And that's George Floyd. So I want to apologize about the service officer or whoever talks to. What's the official name? Public information officer.
Yeah.
So I want to apologize if they're trying to put some pressure on him. I've been talking about it, though.
Yeah, well, that's good.
How do you feel about it?
Well, the thing is on that too. It's like the city of Minneapolis does not want their dirt in the street, so they go after the person that gives the information from the police department. And this is a position, I think that they want to be on camera more than the public relations or the public information officer. So they go to the lowest common denominator and they get rid of that. They vote to get rid of him. He's a police officer. He's not going to get fired. He'll just be on patrol or something or working in an office.
Yeah.
But the thing is,
get another job somewhere else.
Yeah. But the thing is, the city of Minneapolis needs a coordinated communications outlet to the residents of not only Minneapolis, but the state. Because they've done some things that are questionable that they need to come forward. Any Fortune 500 company that will tell you that if a mistake is made, for them to keep their clout, you tell the people the mistake that was made. Then you tell the people how you're going to correct it. You correct it, and then you tell the people that you've corrected it. There's four steps. And the city of Minneapolis is not doing that. And to try to shove him away, he always contacted Mr. Edwards and gave him tons of information,
for me, I wasn't upset, and I just want to personally say it because I just went on the record and said it. I want to say that John Elder, I know he's getting that, whoever's telling him, whether it's Rondo, whether it's Jacob Fry, that is the concerted effort to not get the information needed for the public to understand what's going on. And whether, like you said, it's almost like an optic show where if they get rid of him, they're going to probably put somebody else in place. What they're really doing, this is what it is.
Okay.
They're trying to get away from accountability and actually doing some work. They don't want to do work.
I agree 100%.
They don't want to do the work, and they're hearing people like yourself and me and others who are saying, what does it look like? You can't say scream, defund the police. Well, we know you are going to defund the police, but we know that there's going to have to be fail-safes put in place and also oversight and accountability in these departments, which everybody knows that needs to happen in Fortune 500 company, but especially a public in the public servant in a realm. Absolutely.
And let's talk about this. I'm actually on the Star Tribune. The headline is Minneapolis continues to contend with unprecedented gun violence during the policing debate. But I'm looking here is someone made a graph, this guy, Jim Foster from the Star Tribune, and I had been saying that the race of the gunshot victims were in the 90s, and he broke it down. In the month of June, mind you, the month of June, 31 or 30 days, I think it's June, 30 days.
Yeah.
The race of the gunshot victim, 5% Native American, 8% white, 82% black. That's crazy, first of all. That's crazy. You have 82% of the people shot in June were black. And I will go out on the ledge and say they were not shot by white police officers, number one. Number two, they were shot by people that looked like them. I haven't heard of any white supremacist groups coming into Minneapolis and opening fire as yet. But I have heard of a boyfriend putting bullets in a woman who was 20 weeks pregnant and killing her. I've heard of another girl being shot by her boyfriend, and she's probably not going to be able to walk anymore in her life. And I'm looking at this, I'm saying, this is the same stuff we have year after year in the city of Minneapolis, in the city of St. Paul.
And the numbers, yo, go ahead.
No,
when you say, okay, 5%, 4% white, and then 82% black, you're saying the population as a whole within Minnesota, we are 6% black.
Yeah.
So for us to 6% black. So when you look at the whole pie of the shooting victims, and you're saying we're representative of 82% of the shootings, that screams disparity. That just screams a lot. That's the number right there you're looking at. And you're saying, how in the hell is 6% of the population becoming 82% of the shooting victims?
Exactly.
And people who are getting shot that look like us. And this is why Jeff told me and said, you know, because I've been a serious, and when you're trying to bring accountability in institutions like criminal law and, you know, the police departments and stuff like that, it's a hard effort. I like that because I can use, you know, leverage within the system and stuff like that with these gangs and stuff.
Yes.
I to work alongside of the police officers to be able to stop this. And what happens is we have so many community activists running around that don't even have a freaking plan. They're screaming one second, they want to stop all the shootings, but they're never speaking out about the shootings over north.
Yeah.
They have an effort on it, and then they're everywhere about these police officers, and that's why I'm going to actually start done with. I'm going on the record right now. I pulled up to several of the shootings over north, and, you know, I went live, and I'm to the spot where we got to talk about it all.
Yeah,
we got to talk about it.
We do.
And the women are getting shot, killed. We have to start telling the stories, and we have to start saying, well, it sounds like it's a real race, waste, or war going on, which, you know, in some ways, politically, maybe economically, socially, there are wars going on. We know that, Don. That's why we have black media show going on right now, but we got to really start figuring out what the problem is, because if we can clean up our community, we can maybe start getting these kids to not be afraid to maybe go out, go tutor, and go to the library, and then they can be able to do good in school, and then they can go to college, and now they can get this job, and it's a real systematic thing, and it starts at the very bottom, and violence and poverty are the roots to a lot of this this unfortunate thing that happens to the Black community. I think us,
and
make the what change.
And I agree 100%. You're listening to Our Black News with Don Allen and Jonathan Mason. Our call-in number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. We're live via Facebook Live, or actually via Blog Talk Radio on Facebook Live. And you can also watch the show or listen to the show afterwards on iTunes. Just search for Our Black News. The thing is, Jonathan, getting back into it, is that history in Minneapolis among the Black community has repeated, continues generationally to repeat itself.
Right.
We continue to rehash these community yaktivists, as I call them, that show are not proactive. Well, let's put it like this. I'm part of a group that's supposed to be out on the street to stop youth violence, but I don't have a bulletproof vest. I don't have a gun. I don't have a billy club. I don't have a blackjack, okay? These
right.
kids are armed, okay, to the T. And if they want to bust a cap in your ass, trust me, you will get a cap busted in your ass.
And this, they'll tell you, this what they'll say. This is, you guys, it might be a little explicit language coming if the kids are listening, cover their ears. But what I want to tell about our Black News, we do tell the truth. And what they say is, get your old ass out of here. You're fucking up my money. Ooh.
Yeah.
and you fake as hell.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he done sold you crack rocks. And now you talk about your trying to stop us from violent. Get your ass out of here. I'm going to show your ass. And then that's what happens. That's how the interaction goes. And so now what happens is it's sad. It's very sad because there's grant money that come in to these groups. They have I wouldn't even say a good pitch, but they tell the right people, because people at the top don't want to deal with Black folks or problems.
Not at all. You're absolutely right.
Oh my gosh! And you start trying to figure out the problem, and in a town hall meeting, and we're all fighting, literally fighting each other, screaming, calling each other coons. We have so many problems culturally, and this is due to systematic oppression. I can say that some of the roots are systematic oppression and culturally in depth in so many different ways that we're not even aware. We can't even communicate with each other. We can't go have dinner with each other. Sometimes we're competing with each other. Mm-hmm. If you're not talking about sports all damn day, and I tell you about my favorite book, where I'm a silly, goofy person. And so we're at a spot where that we have to take over the narrative. We have to change what our community looks like, and it's not going to be just sports. It's going to be looking about how we can change it economically. How can we tackle poverty? How can we tackle quote unquote Black on Black crime, and I call it shooting violence, because we have the highest shooting violence. I'm not talking about
mm-hmm.
hunting or violence during hunting. This is straight up. You said something to my baby mama, so I'm going to shoot your mama's house up, and now the little sister gets killed, and then they come back because the little sister gets killed, and then they shoot your mama because they got bad aim, and now two women are killed, and the gangsters, they don't even go to jail because no one tells on each other. And now people are deadly afraid. Now they're having funerals. The funeral gets shot up.
Did
you hear about what happened in Chicago?
Yeah, I was reading that. That's crazy. But the thing is here, it's like, what is the element that gets into these funerals? We had a funeral home shot up here last year, if I'm not mistaken, or a couple years ago. It was someone that was in a clique or gang or whatever you call it these days, and it was a retaliation. And what element? I know a lot of guys that were born and raised in Minnesota, like me. Weren't you born and raised?
Me too.
Yeah.
Me
and
too,
so
yeah.
I don't see us doing that kind of thing, you know. But no. I'm finding out, you know, and I don't have anything against anybody from Chicago. I really don't. I really don't. But you can't bring that killer mentality to Minnesota and expect to survive very long.
Well, you've seen in the 80s. You were here in the 80s, late 70s, 80s, in early 90s. People from Chicago that were coming up. There's documentaries on it. I just laugh when I watch it. They came in, and they're like almost like the criminals of Chicago. So they're on the run. So they come here, and they know if you commit a murder with a black person in Minnesota, you might get 5 to 10 years. Maybe 5. Could be 8 years. We know it's a lot different if you kill a white person, but so that just increases the violence within our own community. But like you said, we have people coming from Chicago. Even the those who are not really that real big of gangsters in Chicago, they come to Minneapolis and they always say, or St. Paul, and say, "Oh, you guys are soft as hell." We can, and it's been that conversation as long as I remember growing up as a long kid. The kids from Chicago, and I'm from Chicago. I'm born in Minneapolis. I was born at North Memorial Hospital.
I was born downtown St. Paul at St. Joseph at 10:30 p.m. in the 60s. And so a lifelong resident here. But we do have a call I'd like to get to. Our producers tell us that this is a gentleman from North Minneapolis, a stakeholder. Mr. Tucker, you're live on the air. What's your question, comment, or criticism?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. You know, you're not dealing with the root cause. The root cause is economics and knowledge. Minneapolis was told not to do any business with black people. Kennepin County was told not to do any business with black people. They told the realtors that do not do any business with black appraisers. If you do not have an economic and a knowledge base, you're lost. What you guys are dealing with is the symptom. You're dealing with symptoms. You're not dealing with the cause. The cause is lack of economic opportunity. You have
Absolutely.
To start there. And if you're not starting there, who shot John? I don't care who shot John. You know, that's not going to solve your problem to delineate the number of shootings and killings and all other misdeeds that happens in Community B. That doesn't mean anything to me or anybody else. You're not providing any economic opportunities until you deal with the economic opportunities. I was told that was somebody wanted to assign a project to me, and I was told that they do not do business with black appraisers. How do you deal with that? And if you're not solving that problem, you're not solving any problem. They're sitting there laughing at you guys, talking about how many killings there are. They're going to be killings till the time get better. The problem is that you have a great deal of what is called despair treatment. The greater the disparate treatment, the greater the killings. Chicago has a great deal of disparate treatment. You have the Negroes, and I say Negroes as a negative connotation, that differentiate themselves and disenfranchise themselves from the broader community. Mm-hmm. And when they do that, the greater disparate treatment you have, the greater crime you're going to have. And that's called the Stockholm Syndrome, that there are certain black people treat other black people like white folks treat black people, and they don't think that those black people, those people should be treated any different. That is the crux of the problem. They had it in the 60s, and when we had the big meetings, there was some that said, well, you don't want to talk to those street blacks. Well, they didn't say that for the one time because they ended up with bloody noses. I'm saying unless you delineate and reduce the despair treatment, you know, you're going to continue to have that because those folks don't see that they have any place to go.
Exactly.
And what you guys are talking about is symptoms. Symptoms. That's not the problem, fellas. The problem is lack of economic opportunity. And the city of Minneapolis would not give a person we know Lenny Chisholm opportunity to use a property in Minneapolis, but gave it to the white man.
Wow.
When you thwart economic opportunity, you create problems. And if you're not talking about economic opportunities, as I told this guy running for office, if you're not talking about economic opportunity, I'm going to leave that blank. I'm not voting for anybody that's not pushing economic opportunity. I don't care whether the white man likes me or the black man likes me. Get a number and stand in line. I don't care about that. My sense of being is not based on what you think about me. It's what I think about myself. It ain't a good neighborhood because white lives in a neighborhood. It's a good neighborhood because I live in a neighborhood. Like Malcolm said one time, they're having these called marches. He said, you don't have marches, you're having parades. And you have clowns leading the parade. Come on.
Oh. You know what? I needed that, Mr. Tucker, because I really think that you're right. You hit a major point because economic justice is vital. We have to have economic solutions. And to be honest with you, I have those. I have maybe $1 to $5 billion potentially coming into Minneapolis and St. Paul within the next five to seven years. We can have that easily happen. And what that looks like as a whole for the Twin Cities could be absolutely massive for the black community. But what do you, like you said, Malcolm X said it. Oh, and I've noticed that I've been on almost every, I had six marches, but I planned six marches last month, okay, and this month. I had the Black Fourth and all these other ones. Trust me, I'm so tired of marching now because what happens is I told them, we got to now get back to the drawing table. Now everybody in these groups are now doing the same route marches I'm doing. They're talking about the people that they should have been talking about years ago. They're just trying to stay relevant. I'm seeing that. Now, what is the plan moving forward? And like you said, we have to go back to like the 60s and think about politically, what do we do as far as bringing up legislation and not only that, creating jobs.
Yeah, exactly.
For the black community.
And I would agree with that statement. And thanks for the call, Ms. Tucker. I think that we have to unlock the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development. They have been the gatekeeper for millions of dollars that are distributed by folks with, in my opinion, have less than a working knowledge of what happens when they give money to the usual suspect.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There was a young lady, she was on this show, her name is Angela Edwards, no relationship to Mr. Ronald A. Edwards, but Angela Edwards was on this show a couple of years ago, maybe more than a couple of years ago. She had wrote a proposal to DEED, Education Explosion. They came out to make sure that she had a brick and mortar building to run her program. And she still has it. It has computers in it. She helps people with resumes, gets people into MTTC. She does all this great work. But she was financing it off her other businesses. And so she started a nonprofit. And the minute she started a nonprofit, they decided that, oh, well, we need to check and make sure. Well, she sent a proposal in. They denied her. About a month later, a request for proposal comes out from DEED with almost the exact wording from her proposal.
Oh.
Okay. And so until we unlock these state agencies that have been out of compliance for years and then force the people that are getting the money in our community.
Hey, look.
Yeah.
Don, this is where I'm going to go at it. And I'm having these conversations. And when I'm talking about these nonprofits and for-profit, this is the next conversation I'm having. You know how I move.
Mm-hmm.
And I will refuse to now. This is where I'm at now. And let's say they stop doing this garbage within these departments.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tap the 1% pocket. I'm privately go to these companies and force these companies to drop this money on us, because what happens is the state is never going to allow us, if we truly believe that this is systematic racism, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we're getting dangled some money from the state, from D, from France, And not saying I won't work with you, not saying that we won't accept money or capital, but if it's to the point where you're denying black people or we're putting proposals together and then now Deed is now taking their proposal and now cherry picking on who the hell they want to do when we come up with damn proposals, we're at the spot where we need to stop worrying about the system and actually start learning about ROI. Or start learning about how do we use our creative educational ability and our cognitive fortitude to be able to say, you know what, it's time for us to actually put a plan in place where companies like Walmart or Cargill want to say, here is $500 million because we can make $10 billion off of you, but here's $500 million. That's a start. We need to take a start and see. That's the direction I'm moving because right now, working with these state agencies, especially in the liberal states, they're picking and choosing who they want. They're not out. That's like Joe Biden. And everybody, Mason, just vote this year. And who are you voting for? If I voted for Trump or whoever I wanted to vote for, it don't matter. I might not even vote this time, Don, to be quite honest for you, because this is Joe Biden is the one we get. And so this is what it is. This is our system. I have people in, I don't even know, you know, Ilhan Omar, I'm going to tell you, okay, she came to the Black Corps. So she did come to the Black Corps. I didn't see her, though, but I put on the event. I didn't see her. She said it was an amazing event. I thank her that if she's listening, thank you for coming out. But what I'm a little frustrated is I have never really had a sit down with her. Mm-hmm. As far as being in congressional district, the 5th congressional district, I have not sat down with her. How in the hell is Jonathan Mason not sitting down with all of these individuals who are in control of? I should be. And what happens is there's too much political theater, too much. I want space to be. I'm not out here doing nothing bad.
And you're absolutely right. I'm looking right now on the screen, and I posted the link on our in the comment section. Medtronic commits $16 million in health and education partnerships to address racial disparities and advance social justice in Black communities.
Who do they give the money to?
They're giving the money to Northside Achievement Zone, People Center and Clinics and Services, and it looks like they're partnering with the Thurgood Marshall Fund. My thing is, someone at Medtronic, you know, I think they're in a line that says turn in your spine here. Because
I've seen that meme put in.
Yeah. They're not listening to the needs of the community. It's not about social justice. Okay. It's about economic justice, like Mr. Tucker said. But yet they're gonna pump more money into Northside Achievement Zone. And I understand the purpose. I know the promised neighborhood stuff back and forth, because when they first were getting the money, I was like, what the hell? And a lot of our Black politicians signed off on that. But they continue to live real good, to stay in the best hotels, to eat the best steaks, if they eat steaks, or the best chicken wings or whatever.
Yeah.
But the thing is, how do you get to the point where Medtronic understands that generationally or historically over the past 10 years, that has not really helped the community get economic justice.
And you hit it right there, Don. Mm-hmm. And this is the Band-Aid, I call it the Band-Aid effect within the Black community. They these groups of people who are making, you know, Minnesota is a very, very wealthy state. We have multiple Fortune 500 companies within Minnesota, and we're one of the highest tax states, too. So with that being said, they're here for, you know, the school districts. I'm not saying for Black people, for the school district, because we know what the rates look like for Blacks. But for whites, it's the best school district. It's the best place to raise a family. It's the best park system. We have everything available here. But what happens is the Band-Aid effect goes to a couple people who have been exploiting the hood. And when I say exploitation on a level that Black folks don't even understand, they don't even see the money being exchanged. They said, there's $16 million. Who the hell got that? And see, now Mason translates for the hood. Yeah. And so what I tell them is, I can show you where they live and who did it. And they've been smiling in your face for dozens of years
yep.
playing like they're going to help you, and that's the type of pressure. And whether it's Don Samuels, see, this is another thing. I've been, me and Don, and we have some history, Don Samuels. Sandra wanted me to work with Nas. I refused because I was going through, I was at Minneapolis Public Schools, and I was going through an incident. And it was just absolutely, you know, it was a total mm-hmm. race take. We're mad at Mason for standing up, doing the right thing, always. He was in the opportunity. He was sitting on the school board. I had wrote all the school board members, and he, as a black man, I hit a chord when I sent my email to him. And I really hit a chord, and me and him went and had dinner or breakfast over at Milda's,
mm-hmm.
over north. And so, you know, he really was real. It seemed like he was real attentive to what I was saying. He did realize, you know, I was within the school district, but he knew I was a strong individual of being in the school district. You know, they silence you a bit. But I've been ever since hypercritical of this individual because I know the type of money that's coming in. And, you know, he blocks me on Facebook. Then he unblocks me to see what's going on because he sees I'm doing work. But I want to and I'm willing to, you know, extend the olive branch and tell these type of groups, let's hold ourselves accountable. Let's have these huge meetings. I need to have conservative black guys. You know, I need the Lacey Johnson. I need the others who are out here. I need to have the conversation with Lewis King and Richard Copeland and Jamez Staples and everybody willing to ready to work. Even Don Sanders and to be able to work with. See, what happens is this Band-Aid effect is really messing us up. And Tucker talks about it, about this economic solution. And if the blacks don't have an economic solution and you guys are going to put this money into these little-ass groups that are paying themselves, they get $100,000, let me just tell you, they get $100,000, they pay $90,000 to themselves, they pay $5,000 to the lawyer, and then they take $5,000 and buy hot dogs for the kids on the north side and say, man, look, we're really trying to make a change. That shit's nuts.
Yeah.
And so now what that looks like for the future of the Twin Cities, it's going to look a lot different because I listened to the criticism mm-hmm. of those of the past in the 60s, like Tucker and others who called on the show who say, stop the malarkey, like Malcolm X, who says it's now protest, but it's actually a black parade with clowns in the front. It's a lot of clowns out here, Don.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty. There's plenty. And you know what? And no one's talking to Economic Development Commissioner Steve Grove, Grove. He's a culprit in this picture, this very complex picture of economic sustainability for black communities across the state of Minnesota, especially the Twin Cities. And he's been dodging left and right. I have not gotten a return phone call. And I've been in contact with several people that want to start this, it's called Stripes University. It is a successful model already in some suburban schools for black kids. And they have about 150 kids. Their college acceptance rate is at 100% for the last 3 years. And it's kind of the best kept secret in the state of Minnesota. But yet, mm-hmm. you know, the DFL nor the Republicans are being really responsive particular mission, and the Steve Grove is really not being responsive at all whatsoever. So I'm saying that we have to put pressure, not just protest, but go there and meet with this guy, sit down, you know, and say, hey, this is what we need, and this is what has to happen, because we need to start the old normal can't be the new normal.
Nope, it can't. It will never work, Don. And these names. You know, like you said, you made the calls. We talk about it off the air. We know the players who are within the city who are just frankly, to quite be honest, are ditching and dodging these tough conversations. And whether they don't want to have us actually fix these issues within our community, I think the time is now to actually have these sit downs and start forcing these individuals to say, when we have a Stripes University with 100% acceptance rate and the Minneapolis Public Schools has two out of every five kids is proficient in reading and math, I it's time for us to have a sit down.
So let me ask you, let's get into this. So yeah. Governor Walz and this is where I stand on the other side of my conservative colleagues, because Governor Walz has mandated or has mandated the mask, the wearing of the mask.
Oh, guys, the same mask that don't work?
Yeah, and so the thing is, I understand the significance of the coronavirus and how small it is, how it can go right through a mask. And see, I got one of these now. Oh, that's the wrong way. I went and got one of these so that I can even see my mouth moving. But it's not getting through that plastic, but it's getting through this cloth here because it's not an N95, right, which are 100%, I guess, better. The thing is, you know, if I can live an extra day because I wore a dysfunctional mask and I might be asymptomatic, I don't know, I've never taken a coronavirus test, but I don't get anybody else sick, I don't get my family sick, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So if I can wear one of these masks and save some lives and get back in the school building and do what we need to do, I don't have a problem with that. But it seems like a lot of folks want to make this really hyper-political and how some way it's infringing on constitutional rights.
Well, Don.
Go ahead.
And you know, you made a very good point. I would, and so I know you said you're on the other side of the conservative, and this is where I might differ with you, and I'm on the other side, because when I listen, so I do a lot of research, and the Republicans are in, I have tons of conservative friends, Republican friends, white and black. I have liberal friends and extreme liberal friends who are almost worse than the extreme conservative friends.
Sure.
If I have to be quite honest, I will. But when I listen about the mask, okay, on the back of the mask, most boxes, it has to, by law, say that they do not stop the coronavirus. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Fauci went on 60 Minutes, and I posted about this. He went on 60 Minutes earlier. He probably shouldn't have did it, and he said that masks do not work, do not stop anything. He shouldn't have never did it.
Mm-hmm.
They had him at the baseball game. He was sitting next to people. He forgot he pulled his mask down while eating ice cream, and he kept it down, and you know, the conservatives caught him on camera. And really, at the end of the day, it feels like it's a really good thing. And places won't even let you in. You have to wear the mask. But if we're going to be honest, we're in the middle of an epidemic.
Yeah.
Epidemics happen last for about every 100 years. They last for two. They're not going to be able to find a vaccine for it. You can't find a vaccine for an epidemic. You're just not going to be able to. It's going to run its course. It's going to be three waves. People are going to die who are vulnerable. We should take all the right precautions, I believe, and masks too. I think stop, you know, the spit, maybe some of the stuff. But like you said, this air that goes through and the coronavirus, the molecule size is a lot smaller than our spit.
Yeah, and here it says that the governor sent out 4 million masks to Chamber of Commerce. How the hell does the average person on the block get a mask from the Chamber of Commerce?
No. And that's why it would be very great for these individuals to work with groups, because, you know, in the beginning, when the COVID-19 started, groups like Nakima, remember when they were over north? They were over north and they were free masks.
Yeah.
So they were given masks, but this is the time where we have to have the chain of command in order, where we can say those who are well versed within the community, whether you know you like them or not, they were doing the mask giveaways. Why don't you work with these individuals to make sure they disperse the masks? The Chamber of Commerce is not going to be able to talk to the people on Lindale and Broadway.
No.
The murder station.
No.
It's not
going to happen. It's not going to happen at all. And that's been our problem here, because the state has a few, I'm going to put it like this. They have a few key Negroes that in the Twin Cities that they feel comfortable with doing business with. And that's always the first people they call. But these people are antiquated. They've been out of the loop. And they're just about at the point where they're ineffective, other than getting in front of a camera. And so they need to start using a group of new folks that will do new things, that be innovative, exciting, and it will attract a group of people that need to be attracted to a mission. Now, as far, you know, I don't do gun violence outreach. That's not in my purview at all whatsoever. But by looking at it, I know there are agencies out there that do a good job at gun violence. When I say gun violence, I don't mean the kind of hyper-liberal gun violence. Oh, no, someone got shot. We got to ban weapons, okay? That's BS, okay? Because
There's the Constitution. There's your Second Amendment Constitution, yeah. Right? It's the right.
Yeah, so the thing is, I mean, I understand that a gun can't buy itself by itself. It can't load itself by itself. It can't shoot anybody by itself.
Right. It can't kill nobody. Guns don't kill people. People kill people.
Exactly. And so with that said, I'm sitting here looking around like, okay, well, how do we get these kids to stop killing each other? As Mr. Tucker said, the symptoms
yes.
of lack of economic justice. Well, first of all, I know if you work a kid 20, 30 hours a week, 40 hours a week, and he's making at least. He ain't got time. You're going to go home. Oh, I got to go to work tomorrow. And he's making an income. It's made it easy for him. It's on his debit card. He doesn't have to worry about where he's going to get paid from. You know, he knows that when he wakes up on that Friday, Wednesday, whenever he gets paid, boom, there's a check waiting for you, my brother.
It's a direct deposit.
Direct deposit. And those type of terms are not even vocabulary that they're even using in the black neighborhoods where all these killings are going on.
It's almost taboo. And Don, and this is another thing. That's why when I was talking about the switch from nonprofits to actually for-profit, where for so long we've had to unravel our own justice, okay? And when we hear terms like direct deposit, that's just a transactional direct deposit. You put the money in their account. But when you talk about fundings or you talk about money and you're actually doing the work with a precise strategic plan, it makes people afraid. And I'm starting to notice it makes people really afraid. And it makes the people really afraid when you start educating your own community.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's what I'm doing. And so when I'm talking about these terms or I'm talking about ROI, when I'm talking about the return on investment, and I'm talking about these type of things where you come up with a plan, and if your plan helps benefit other people, if they can see it, and you got your own business, you write up that plan, tell them how you're going to do it, and they're going to say, hell yeah, because they can make some money out there in a capitalistic system, we can all get it.
Yeah.
And that's
the type of it's not a problem. And for those of my conservative friends that are listening, this is not – what Jonathan and I are talking about here is a system in Minnesota that has been broken a long time. And we can address it on the talk show. We can talk about it off air and some things that we know to be true. But until we get in and change these systems to make sure that there's an equal allotment, because, yeah, you can throw money at things and not solve a problem. We've seen that already for at least 10 years. We're asking you.
And I know the Republicans have been saying this for a long time. They're saying some of the same sentiments that we're saying about the people in the community, because they're like, how the hell did we give you guys almost over $200 million? And the shooting, there's nothing's changed.
Yeah.
It actually looks.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to say, well, who'd you give the money to? And then they say, well, I gave it to them. Well, you do it every single time there's a shooting. Well, we feel comfortable with it. Well, they ain't been doing shit.
No.
And that's the
point. They haven't been doing a damn thing. And so you're sitting out there. I mean, I remember the Minnesota Department of Health gave an agency over North Minneapolis that I think had two people working over $150,000 to make sure that community, when I say the community in this context, the black community, knew about MSHA, the health insurance. And I swear, before that money even hit the check account, their checking account, these guys, him and his wife, was on a cruise. They had a new car.
When the money came in for George Floyd, people were on the river. They're still on the river. They're traveling. Hey, Don, I could work. I can even get on the show. I could literally, the day George Floyd died, I ran down to the city hall. I lost my voice. The National Guard came in. I'm still planning events, protests, block parties, all every single day. I've had my baby born. And these people are on the river just spending big money. They're hanging out. And quite honestly, it says, what are we just doing, Jonathan? And what are we going to do next economically, like Tucker said? What are we going to do next? Because this is unacceptable. They're on the river. They're hanging out. They're enjoying this, the $150,000, and they're really they're going to get $2,000 back to the community. And then they plan an event, and they cancel. I'm just tired of it. I'm tired.
Yeah, they've been doing that quite a bit here. Again, our call number is 347-426-3904. We have about 5 minutes left. We're going to go 5 minutes over 10:30 and then just kind of wrap it up here. But actually, let's do this. Jonathan, why don't you tell people when you're on during the week, Mason in the morning and all that. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to keep going with the Masons in the morning. So every single day I do live with Mason if it's afternoon. If it's in the morning time, it's called Mornings with Mason.
Okay.
That's how I do.
Okay.
And so if it's in the afternoon, I do live. I am working in the economic field right now as far as what does it look like for sustainability for Minneapolis to move forward so I don't hear sirens all the time on the north side or on the south side of St. Paul. And so we're going to – and I'm very transparent, and I'm trying to keep it up. So, you know, that's what I do. Every day, please tune in. It's Mornings with Mason. It's Mornings with Mason. And hashtag Our Black Week. Everybody follow me. I shared it on my page. Please go like our Black News page. And then also go to Apple.
Yes, and also every Wednesday at 7:30, I'll be interviewing the politician on The Last Question. 7:30 on Anchor FM Radio, which is a huge online platform. The show's on Spotify, iTunes, and about several other places, so you can't miss it. It's called The Last Question. And that's my show outside of this one. But we'd like to thank everybody for listening. We'll be back next week with some more interesting stuff. And then we're going to also talk about putting together a think tank for Black Minnesotans. How we can do that to make sure that money that comes out of the state legislation actually goes to the sector people in our community. With that said, hey, thanks for listening, and here's James Brown taking us away.
Say it loud.
Say it loud.